ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Look out. It's end of year party season. A good time to think about friendships at work. Are you hanging out with your work besties, making new connections with colleagues, or finding excuses to get out of work ASAP? Where do you sit on the friends at work spectrum?
I remember when I was quite junior, there being a conversation about the people you start with in your career at 18, 19, 20, whatever age it is you start, will be the people who are hiring you, promoting you, connecting you to different people later in your career as well.
I can't believe that people don't build friendships in the professional sphere. I see every opportunity when I meet with people in professional situations to develop a friendship.
But sometimes friendships at work can be tricky to handle.
If your friend has a sudden need personally for your attention at work when you're on a tight deadline and you have to reject them, they may take that personally.
Hello, I'm Lisa Leong, and for This Working Life, how to manage friendships at work.
My name is Shelley Rogers. I'm an organisational psychologist, which means that I'm interested in the practice of psychology and how does it affect people in their workplace.
Shelley says friendships can add a lot of value to your work life.
There's quite a lot of research that says that having a good friend at work increases people's satisfaction and joy at coming to work. It reduces intentions to leave. And the flip of that is if you don't have any friends at work, then you are likely to not enjoy your work and your workplace very much and likely to have higher intentions of leaving. So organisationally, it's really good for people to have friends at work.
And is it generally good for your career?
I think the skill is knowing how to add these extra roles into the array of skills that you demonstrate in your workplace. Think of being able to manage multiple roles as one of these workplace skills. We aren't very gracious about these complex relational skills that I'm talking about. We dismiss them as soft skills. I think that's most unfortunate because I think these are really complex, challenging, and critically important skills. These are the skills that build your career. And these are the skills that make it possible to keep your friends, do your job well, and expand your career as you want to.
Sounds a little bit like work friendships, though, are less robust than friendships outside work because it's somewhat conditional on your roles and where you are in terms of your career then.
Well, I would ask the question that is a work friend who is the friend you have because you sit maybe in the desk opposite or something like that and you don't have a great deal of activity and engagement with them outside work, a life friend or a work friend?
Is that the test?
Yeah, I think so. Like, how many friends have you got? You know, it's an interesting question to think. The friends you've got from a workplace you were in, say, 5 or 10 years ago, are you still connected with them? And if you are still connected with them, they're a life friend. If you've lost that connection because you don't go to that workplace anymore or you're not in that office anymore, then they're a work friend. And it's fine to have friends with different kinds of intensity and in different places.
Interesting. There's some disagreement, though, about the divide between work friends and what Shelley calls life friends.
My name's Julie Parker. I'm a career coach and career counsellor. I don't see the need to be a difference between work relationships and relationships, friendships outside of the workplace. And a lot of people refer to that as the separation of church and state. And I've always taken that as a challenge. I want to make that person my friend, even if though they're holding me at arm's length. And I've had friends that have been my lecturers, my bosses, and work colleagues, and those relationships have endured outside of work. One of the best examples of one of the friendships I've built in the workplace was with a friend who showed me uncommon kindness and reached out to me on LinkedIn before I even started. And we developed a really close friendship that included, you know, Thursday wines at lunch and in and out of each other's lives outside of work. And we also became business partners. It's such a trusted friendship. I'm a Gen X, she's a millennial. There's 27 years difference in our ages. And she's one of my best friends in my life. Thank God we met at that workplace.
But what about when your friend is now your boss or you become the boss of your friend? Here's what happened when Julie was promoted above her colleagues.
I remember the manager at the time saying to me, you're going to have to not encourage those friendships and, you know, step aside from that as a leader. And I really thought about that carefully before I took that on. And I actually found that I didn't need to put those friendships aside. I think you can do both. Women can juggle and ride a tricycle and their pants are on fire all at once. We can do everything at once and still garner the respect of the people we're working with, get the job done, and work collaboratively as a team.
Shelley, what do you make of the manager's advice to step aside from those friendships?
It reminds me a little bit of a scenario that I often see when I'm running my From Mates to Manager workshop, where I will have men, usually men, from council works depots, and the works depots staff are almost, not entirely, but almost exclusively men. And there'll be the member of the team who's, they're all friends, they know each other, they know their families, all that social stuff. And this is particularly true in regional areas. And then one of the team gets promoted, like your respondent here, and the advice or the practice is they lose their relationship with their team. And I wonder if it's a function of the skills, as was said, not women may have more than men to manage multiple relationships and know when is appropriate and when is not to be in one relationship versus another. So I meet so many men who lose their former friends and are really disappointed or distressed by that. So I think that advice reflects that.
Now, you mentioned you ran a workshop called From Mates to Manager. How did this all come about, Shelley?
Well, about 12 years ago, I got asked to work with courts here in South Australia, to work with the administrative staff and their people who were occasionally stepping up, leading, and then going back into the team. And so when you act up and then you come back into the team, what's your role? Am I a leader this week? Am I not? I'm not a leader next week. And how do you manage yourself? And how do you relate to the people around you when you have these constantly changing responsibilities? And that's how From Mates to Manager evolved. And I've been delivering this now across Australia for the past 12 years. And the problems are very similar. I don't care what your area is, from the courts to people working in nursing homes or disability care facilities to hospitals to factories. It's very similar dilemmas. What are the skills that I need to be able to manage these multiple relationships, including this new one of being a leader and having new peers and new responsibilities, whilst maintaining good relationships with the people around me, including the fact that I might have to say, that was badly done. I need to issue a formal warning about that.
Oh, that would be a difficult conversation. How are you when it comes to managing different roles? Let's dig into the literature now on friendship at work.
I am Dr. Amanda Ferguson, organisational psychologist and general psychologist.
Amanda has found something in the research that is worth thinking about.
The research talks about friendship efficacy, which is the ability to be effective in this situation of managing friendships within the workplace.
Oh, say more about, so what's it called, friendship efficacy?
Yeah, it's a new buzz term in the research. So we've had self-efficacy, which is being self-efficacious or effective in ourselves, in the literature for, well, since the beginning of organisational psychology, over 100 years. So now we've got this new academic term of friendship efficacy in the workplace.
And how's it defined?
Being able to regulate yourself or manage yourself, being effective in being able to manage these conflicts, the dual roles, the favouritism that could be seen by other people, all these challenges of having a friendship at work, particularly if you're on different levels of management. So it's being effective in the friendship in the business context.
There was another study that showed that workplace friendships can lead to incivility. So that could be insensitive, rude or discourteous towards other co-workers. Can you talk us through that, Amanda?
Well, when people get depleted or drained by the friendship at work, they often resort to that incivility because they're burning out and they didn't realise that they're drained of energy. So, again, having more formal sort of ideas of let's talk about that at lunchtime because that's a personal thing. I can't be drained at work will make me more civil and less likely to resort to incivility automatically.
And anything else that we should be aware of making sure that we don't turn into this mode?
I think remembering to put, as Edward de Bono used to say, put on a hat when you go to work. You're in a role. And it's not that you leave your personal self behind, but that's behind the hat. So you're still authentic, but it's more formal, it's more procedural. You're there to do a job. So remembering I'm here to do a job, it's business, not personal. That mindset is incredibly important, and having expectations or boundaries that we won't discuss lengthy personal issues while we're on work hours. We'll have a set time when we talk about our personal issues outside of work.
And what about that ability to be able to have productive conflict or disagree with each other? How does friendship affect that potentially?
Well, hopefully in a good way. Because the research shows that the closer the friendship, the more likely you are to be able to do those effective, assertive communications and do conflict resolution. Whereas if you've got a vague friendship, it actually is a bit clumsy. It's a bit harder to know how to cut corners or to navigate, to have humour when you may not have a shared sense of humour and understanding of each other. So you're probably more formal in those situations.
Maybe the foundation of friendship, which is trust, can help you raise something in a way that shows that you have the other person's best interest at heart. You're listening to This Working Life on ABC Radio National with me, Lisa Leong. Here's something to ponder. Has making friends at work changed over time? Or does it depend on what life stage you're at? Perhaps work used to be more social than it is now.
I'm Steph Clark. I'm a futurist, a facilitator, and a friend enthusiast. It's an interesting question whether it is different times of life in terms of your age, if it's generational, if it's circumstantial based on where we are now post-COVID, a very different working environment as well, or just a soup of all of those things and the way the world is and the other challenges. So when I started my full-time employment, age 18, nearly 20 years ago, so you can work out how old I am from that, I fell into this group of friends, this group of other graduates, other people who were doing the same work as me. And not all of us loved the work the whole time, but we loved working with each other. And this was 2005, 2006. So the environment was very different in terms of how people were connecting and how much time people spent together physically at work, because you were in the office or at client sites every single day. There wasn't really work from home. We weren't doing that. So it was just a very different environment, I think, which created just more connection because you were just together all the time. And for good and for bad, because obviously there's some people you may not have wanted to be around every single day, but there was a lot of people I did. And that was amazing.
Steph is still close friends with that same group of people 20 years on. But during that period, she moved to Australia and she had to start again.
So I was in my late 20s at that stage, and I was more senior, obviously, moving into when I moved over here. So a lot of the people I was joining with, and they were established in their teams, but they're also established here because they lived in Melbourne, they lived in Australia, they either were from here or had been here some time. So it was a very different experience to starting here versus when I started in the UK at 18 as a school leaver with a group of people who were all in the same situation. And the team I was in was not a, it was a great, I really enjoyed the team, but it didn't have that same routine and ritual around connection in a more social setting. You know, a couple of times a year, there'd be a Christmas thing, summer thing, something like that. So then I had to really pick out the people I wanted to hang out with and be more intentional around inviting them for lunch. And then some of them, you kind of go, actually, I'd quite like to hang out with that person at the weekend. And then you sort of find out that, oh, they're into the same music as me. Maybe they'd like to go to this gig that I've found or come to a cooking class or whatever it was. You find your people. And for me, I've always found it quite easy to then ask that next question around, hey, do you want to come and do this thing? Which I think is something that a lot of people that I talk to, and when I've been talking to people about friendship, that's the bit that people get really stuck on, is that fear of rejection or the even knowing if that's an okay thing to do, to ask someone to, kind of asking someone out in a way. And that feels kind of weird and scary sometimes.
Organisational psychologist Shelley Rogers also has some tips on how to make friends at work.
Find out about them. Get to know who they are. Understand their family, whether it's human or fur family, know their birthdays, know their likes and dislikes, share your favourite films and talk about music, and be open to knowing that there's other people in the space who want to connect. We are social creatures, we humans, and we really do crave connection. Most people are really delighted to open up and spend time talking with other humans about the things that interest them. So show interest in those other people and the things that interest them, and they are likely to then reciprocate with interest in you and finding out about you so that you can find some common ground, that thing called friendship.
Demographers say there's never been so many different generations in the workforce together at the same time, and that can provide other benefits. Here's Dr. Amanda Ferguson.
Oh, growth and development, learning so much from other generations. But even though we have differences in our generations, we learn so much, and so much mentoring and coaching goes on in those situations. It's critical to one's career.
I like how now it feels very much two-way in terms of the mentoring, so learning from younger generations and the things that they are more naturally inclined towards.
Absolutely. And there's the flat structure that we're talking about, that older people can benefit and not feel that the burden's on them, and that it's more equal and there's more give and take. We see that then those lovely mentorships and coaching situations, and even just collegial situations, find there's a friendship where there's almost often a surrogate parenting child relationship that makes up a lot of deficit in family friendships and family relationships too.
Let's find out more about how to manage your roles and maintain boundaries with friends at work. Organisational psychologist and founder of the Mates to Manager program, Shelley Rogers.
It's about knowing what role you are in at any given moment. So a manager, especially one in a regional community, is going to be a member of their community. They're going to be friends. I met a lady who ran a facility in a very small country town and managed her mother, a sibling, some cousins, and an auntie. She managed those relationships amazingly well. But we are also members of our organisation, we're members of our team, and when you are a leader, you also occupy that role of leader, and then being able to move with fluidity into the right role at the right time is the skill. And really what I want to do in From Mates to Manager is help people realise that there's an array of skills and ways of thinking to aid them moving into this new role, in addition to the other roles that they also can occupy.
With that lady who was able to manage and move with fluidity between those relationships, between those roles, what was she doing that we can learn from?
Well, she was crystal clear about who she was in any given moment. So when she was at work, she addressed her mother by her mother's first name, and said that she'd been really clear with all her family. There were to be no, you know, pet names or family names, no titles like Auntie this or something like that. And when she was out of work, all of those family names came out. She made it clear that she didn't want to know about work-related issues. And if something came up, she would say, see me at 9 o'clock on Monday morning, or put that in an email to my work email and kill the subject. So she was clear about when she was at work and when she wasn't.
That's really incredibly helpful. Thank you, Shelley. So what are some of the main challenges that people face when they move positions to then manage their peers when it comes to those friendships?
Firstly, it's about recognising that there is a new role, an additional role that you're now occupying that the friend does not occupy, but and you do. So that means you might have new peers. So yes, you certainly might still want to hang out with the team that you're managing, just not all the time, because you're going to have new peers you want to hang out with who are also at your new promotional level, because there are things to learn, resources, supports, etc. There are also conversations you might want to be really clear you don't want to be part of anymore. After all, once you become a leader in an organisation, you don't want to be having those conversations that go, our lousy leaders, because you're one of them now. And getting really clear and comfortable with the idea that you have to have difficult conversations and that you can't avoid it.
That could be hard when you've got a friend and they move into management and suddenly they're not hanging out with you anymore at work. How do you navigate that if you're the one who's been promoted?
It might be that it's not that you're not hanging out with people. You probably still have lunch with people, perhaps not quite as often, because you'll have other jobs to do. And you also have to be really careful to recognise that other people may confuse your hanging out with your friend to be potentials for bias. Oh, she gets all the better shifts because they're old mates, and you can't raise anything about her because they're friends. So you have to be really careful that you're not creating perceptions of bias or favouritism.
But it's not all bad or difficult, of course. Dr. Amanda Ferguson says having friends at work can be good for your career.
Oh, overwhelmingly, the research shows that, you know, the dark side is just something to be aware of. But yes, overwhelmingly, friendships help our career because they help us think about our career, promote our career, even help us with references in our career and ideas about our career. They include friendships of all different levels in the world of work.
Thanks to our expert guests and to contributors Steph Clark and Julie Parker for sharing their stories. And thanks for listening to This Working Life with me, Lisa Leong. It was produced by Michelle Weeks and mixed by Matthew Crawford on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Naarm, Melbourne. We're taking a break now, but in the meantime, you can enjoy some highlight episodes for the ABC Radio National summer season. And when we come back, This Working Life will be broadcasting live from Friday, January 24th at 11 o'clock. This means that you can text us real time and be part of the conversation. So get your calendar ready and put this in. ABC Radio National, Friday mornings at 11 o'clock from the 24th of January will be on your radio and the ABC Listen app. If you haven't already, search for This Working Life on the ABC Listen app and tap the heart to follow. Can't wait to speak to you then. Until next time, love your work and enjoy the break.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.